This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network. Visit jabberjawmedia.com for more shows like this one.
Today's show is sponsored by Brooke Linen. Get $20 off and free shipping when you use the promo code BADCHRISTIAN at brooklinen.com.
Today's show is also sponsored by Movement. Get 15% off today by going to mvmt.com/bcpod. That's mvmtmovement.com/bcpod.
Good job, Toby. Today's show is also sponsored by Lyft. Start driving for Lyft today. And check this out. You can get a $500 new driver bonus. Just go to lyft.com/badchristian.
You are now entering the Bad Christian Podcast.
Bad Christian Podcast.
Very good.
Hey, did you guys hear about the the latest allegations? Like the biggest, you know, the biggest one yet. The latest one. Have y'all heard?
Whatever this joke is, it's not going to be good. But no, it's not going to be funny, and it's going to get us in trouble. Go ahead with the punchline, Joey.
Here we go.
With men and women, with men like heckling women and sexually harassing. Did y'all hear the latest one?
Here we go. What is it?
Have you heard the latest one?
I'm about to hear it.
Our president, he's been talking about grabbing pussies. He's been. He's been saying crazy things about women and degrade. Like our president is now doing. Our president all people. It's our president now.
That's not breaking news, it's though, just, is it? Wasn't that like earlier than the other ones?
Yeah, but Obama. Isn't that hilarious? Now that people say stuff like the foot, I will never get over. Obama, all he did was just the presidency.
Yeah,
there was no like shame. There was no bad stuff. They tried to say he wasn't from this country. Couldn't prove all this stuff. Like they tried to find stuff, couldn't find anything. And all he did was just be honorable.
Yeah.
And cool and nice, kind, welcoming, generous. But man, sure I'm glad we got Trump, right? This is way better, apparently.
It's funny that it's just funny how when you get into the whole, into a mode of something, it's obvious that you've just decided how it's going to go. And then at some point you snap and you go, wait a second, this is too much or something. I don't know, but it seems like people hardly get to that. I was thinking of a really funny crossover point was, if you think about Christmas coming up, think about all of the... Oh wait! Think about Christians and Christmas long ago, before American commercialization of Christmas. Let's say it was Christmas. It's a holiday. It's about Jesus. It's Christmas. It's a Christian holiday, you know. And then Santa is in there, and some presents are in there, and some decorations are in there, and it gets crazy all the way until, let's just go back 10 years ago. It's Christmas, and it is unbelievably commercialized, and everything about Christmas is red and green lights and presents and shopping and Black Friday. Unbelievable shift from all the way from being Jesus's birth to what we knew of Christmas 10 years ago. And then one tiny little thing happened. People started saying happy holidays instead of Christmas. And it's like, oh, what the fuck?
I know.
Right? Then everybody got upset. It was already 99.9% removed from Christ in the first place. And then as soon as somebody said happy holidays, that's too damn far. That's it. Now I'm mad. Now you ruined my holiday. It was our Christian thing until you said happy holidays instead of Merry Christmas.
We've lied to our kids about a magical person that comes to
no
to
problem
your
with any of that until you still
ain't
until
no
you
problem
the
with
cups
that
to
shit,
holiday
man.
Cups. Then it's over. Now we protest.
I feel like we probably live in a day and age where it just are wanting to get mad about something, or anything can be said. I was talking a little bit yesterday. I've been sick all week, which is crazy. Been coughing up unbelievable green stuff. Stomach tore up. Now my daughter's sick. Had to clean up vomit 2 times in a row. What's really funny is Ike got home yesterday after school, and we were like, "Yeah, Junie's sick," and he was working on this toy thing they have. These beads. There's beads all over my house now. Joey, do your girls have the beads where you put them on like a little pegboard and then iron it? You know what I'm talking about? You ever seen that? It's like a pegboard bead thing. Anyway, Ike's working on a
They're really smart kids.
Ike's working on a poo emoji. Pegboard ironing thing. And he's just sitting there and he goes, I was like, yeah, June's not feeling well. He just looks up and goes, oh, is June going to die like Maybelle?
Oh, no.
back to my poo emoji. Oh, and he just went right back to his poo emoji. I was like, shit. I said, I went to full dad and I was like, no, she isn't going to die. She's just sick. Good Lord, son. And he was just right back working on his poo emoji. I was like, shit.
It's good to know at this age they're just super close and they watch out
for she's going to go, it's he didn't better even for care. Her to he go didn't, now it, while he doesn't care that much then as well.
I know. It was almost like, it's like, you know, she got a boo-boo or something. Is she going to die? I don't know. I'm back to my work. Anyway, so I've had a little bit of time to kind of lay around and listen to podcasts. I was listening to Joey's podcast, Pastor with No Answers. He had Jesse Smith from Zayo, who's just amazing. Their Zayo DVD is one of my all-time favorites. But you guys were talking about mental health and mental, I guess, illness and stuff like that. But he said one thing that really struck me, and it was the idea that just because there's a thought doesn't mean you have to validate it or that it's accurate or real or you have to give it any framework of reality or that you need to even respond to it. There are thoughts in your head all the time that can just flow in and out, and that's okay. That doesn't mean it's you. It doesn't mean that's who you are. It's not your mm-hmm. identity. But what we are seeing now is in social media, that same thing's happening. Thoughts fly out of people's heads, and they just say them, but then the other people take them as real or valid, or I need to respond. I do this. I see somebody say something, and I want to respond, or I get mad, or I get angry. How could they do this? And it's so bizarre. Like you were saying, the olden days before Christmas was so commercialized and stuff. In the olden days, like me back in high school in the 90s or whatever, if you didn't like somebody or they said something bad, you just avoided them. You didn't take it as accurate, or you just thought that person's a shithead or whatever. You didn't like... there was no opportunity for your voice to be heard and their voice, and it's a big debate and who's right and if I can shut you down or you shut me down. Also, like, now we are validating everything.
Yeah, you know what? That's weird.
The same way as with holidays. Like, uh-oh, somebody's just saying happy holidays. No, got to shut them down because this is real and it's dangerous to my belief. That's not true.
With the digital trail, it's just everything stays open. Like, all conflicts are permanently open. Like, it used to be me and you getting a fight on the bus for 5 minutes and then that's over. But if that was on a comment thread... It's permanent, right? If me and you've got in a fight on Facebook about a topic, argument. It just stays open as long as people want to view our fight or You're our right. temper, which you and I don't fight on Facebook. We just fight in real life.
I know.
We don't even that's fight on the podcast, that's what I think just you and do. Joey. But you
yeah,
know what I mean?
Think everybody should make a deal. I think Joey said this last week. You just don't, no matter what, you just don't do it.
Just
don't
knock
fight.
It off.
Don't do it. Stay away from it. If somebody pisses you off, just scroll.
Well, that's the other thing.
You don't have to walk away. You don't have to walk away. You don't have to delete Facebook. You just scroll.
You bring up another interesting thing there, and that's that your thoughts are not you. But in a way, I mean, it's like, well, you get into a really weird thing of do we have free will and what is what. But your thoughts arise from your brain. And we know you have bad thoughts, but are you your bad thoughts or just competing systems in your brain? Like, we know people that have brain injuries wind up doing sometimes these really, if you have a brain tumor pressing on the wrong region of your brain, this part of your other part of your brain could take over where you have these dark thoughts or actions. Like the tower shooter in Texas had that problem, you know, back in the 70s or whenever that was. And so, yeah, I mean, you have these really bad thoughts. They are, and so they come from within you and they come out, but you're not necessarily them. So, but once you type your thought, well, it's on your profile. You know, that is kind of you then. You know what I mean? Like, once you have your thought, you think, are you the thinker of your thoughts is a good question. Do your thoughts come and you embrace them and then you say them and then you think them and then you articulate them and then you become them? Like, or you're just bound, they just, you know. Kind of a weird philosophical question there.
Like, for example, though, that just takes me to the next step is you aren't, nobody understands or gives anybody any time to change. The same way as maybe the best thing ever is that Christmas has gotten so commercialized that Christians let go of it and don't make it a Christian holiday. Like, if you want Christ in Christmas, then make your personal life and holiday about Christ, and it will be.
It will be.
Don't be offended. Don't be offended that you walk into a store that belongs to someone else and say, I can't believe you guys aren't saying Merry Christmas. This is ridiculous. It's not your store.
Yeah,
I got family members that boycott.
You can boycott that.
Happy holidays.
We went to a thing in Bellevue, you know, in Seattle, of course. And it's, oh my gosh, what a production it is! They have a parades every night in Bellevue, Snowflake Lane. They snow. All these people dressed up giving out candy. I can't imagine how much it costs to the, whoever donates or taxpayers pay for it, but they do a production every night, and they're very, very careful not to say Christmas. They say, every, you know, obviously they're trained to say happy holidays, and then as soon as the parade starts, they start playing, obviously, Christmas music, and every Christmas song says Christmas instantly. They immediately start, like, well, obviously, on the other side of that debate is hilarious because it's obvious. You can say happy holidays all you want. It's obviously Christmas. It's just the every song is about Christmas and says the word Christmas, even if it's not a religious song. So you're not going to get rid of that. You're not going to get rid of Irving Berlin's White Christmas. I mean, what are you going to do? Change the lyric to that? It's not a particularly a religious song, but it's a Christmas song because it's obviously Christmas. So who cares?
And they just picked Christmas Day. Most people think that scholars think that Jesus was born like in July, but we just picked it because it, what is it? The moon is the highest or something
solstice
like that. It
used to be
like
something. Who knows?
Yes. Yeah, winter solstice, yeah. Pagan ritual and stuff. So Christians kind of tried to abduct that and change it so those damn pagans wouldn't get theirs and we got ours. So, I mean, everything that you see isn't really that way. So just take a breather. Just breathe. It just blows my mind. Like, and I hate that I'm that way, too. I can read something on Facebook and go, uh-uh, not today, mister. But I'm just so stupid. I'm just so dumb if I respond. That's why I'm so happy when I don't.
How like, many times have I ever, you composed the comment or tweet?
Oh,
went,
my
yeah,
God.
It's not worth it.
Dude,
this.
10 times a day.
Yeah.
No joke. Like, yesterday while I was sick, laying on the couch, I did probably at least 5 really long, multi-paragraph responses to people, and then I would just delete it.
Well, that's a good idea. That's like having a thought and then not saying it, right?
I mean, you get it out, you're like, they don't need to hear it. Who cares?
Yeah.
They don't care. What does this person in Idaho care? Or wherever they live in the world?
Yeah, I actually broke a rule, and I probably should have done this from my personal Twitter, but from Bad Christian on Thanksgiving, I said something about, you know, enjoy your families while you eat and eat and eat and eat. And don't, you know, as you eat and enjoy each other's company, please remember the dangers and evils of LGBTQ or something like that. And there was one or two people that said, and I really think that some people will have a hard time seeing that you're joking.
Yes.
And there's a lot
of
people that said, no, it's totally joking. But I just went ahead and erased it. I just didn't think it was worth it.
It's like the other tweet you did where you made fun of Disney. Or something, and then Michael Jackson's daughter thought you were serious.
Daughter
replied to it. Paris Jackson.
That is hilarious. Hey, Michael Jackson's daughter, one of your all-time favorite singers, performers in the world,
quoted was like, a tweet of Joey's as bigotry.
Not this pastor.
Obvious joke.
Right. And then when I responded to her, she just deleted her comment. She's just like, I'm not getting in this. Hey, y'all get a kick out of this. So Pastor Greg, who's the pastor of Seacoast, is coming on the podcast next month, and I was at a very small dinner party with him. No big deal. He's just a really big time guy. Everybody knows him. And
yep. Just you, Pastor Greg, Trump.
But anyway, he kind of reasoned with me, and he said, "Yeah, there's it's pretty often when people come up to me and say why." No. They ask him, have you heard of the Bad Christian Podcast? He's like, yes, I've heard of it. And they're just like, how do you let one of your pastors get on there and say things that he says? Like, how do you let this happen? Like, he's a campus pastor. And listen how badass Pastor Greg is. He looks at him and says, well, at Seacoast, we're really, really hard up for campus pastors. That's how he
that's all
he
you got to do. Yeah, I love that. It's right. Just so amazing. I mean, that you can just... First of all, it's amazing you can do what you do for in your own head, that you can handle both things, yeah. Joey, and unbelievable that Seacoast can allow that. And if you just don't take it that seriously, it's okay. It's totally fine. But let me tell you about something that is serious, and that is the bed sheets that you sleep on. You know, woo, why? Because you spend a third of your life in the thing. So let me tell you the ones that you should be sleeping on, and that's Brooklinen, of course. We've been talking about these guys for a while, and now it's just in time for the holiday gifting season. And yes, you're going to hear a lot of sponsors and things talking about the gift season. But let me tell you, all these podcast sponsor spots, that's such a good way to get gifts. You can do it while you're listening to the podcast on your mobile device. Get your shopping done while you're being entertained by me and Toby and Joey. What could be better? Buying great sheets is an easy way to upgrade your nightly routine. The sheets can make or break a good night's sleep, help you feel better and well-rested every day. Even though quality sheets make for quality sleep, most high-end bedding is marked up more than 300% by the time it reaches the store. But Brooklinen makes quality luxury sheets and bedding accessible to everyone. And again, it's a great gift. I think these sheets are terrific and you will like them. They've got versatile color patterns. You can mix and match. You can complement any decor. This stuff is luxury bedding. It is underpriced and you got to try these sheets today. I love my Brooklinen sheets. Try these sheets and you'll know why I love them. Brooklinen.com has an exclusive offer just for our listeners. You can get $20 off and free shipping when you use the promo code BADCHRISTIAN at Brooklinen.com. In fact, Brooklinen is so confident that you'll love your new sheets that they offer a 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty on their sheets and comforters. There's no reason not to give these sheets a try for yourself or as a holiday gift this season. So give the gift of luxury sheets. The only way to get $20 off and free shipping is to use promo code BADCHRISTIAN at Brooklinen.com. That's BROOKLINEN.com. Promo code Bad Christian. All right, we got a guest coming on in a few minutes, but before that, we got to talk about the most important thing in the
most important thing
world
of 2018,
at least maybe of the decade or the new millennium. Yes. And that is, we're here to announce Bad Christian Con 2018.
Woo.
We have our own conference. Man. It's so exciting. So here's the official announcement.
Oh my gosh.
You can go to badchristiancon.com and see what it is, but we don't have all of the stuff worked out. We've been working crazy. We had this idea just a few weeks ago and been going like mad on artwork, guest, speaker, schedule, venue, website.
Hey, real quick. I don't want you to skirt by that. We are having a conference that and we're having it in January.
We started planning it
a couple weeks ago.
That's right. We're going to have a Christmas party, which we were late on planning. And then we said, well, why don't we just do it in January? Well, why don't we do it in Nashville? Why don't we turn it into a conference? Okay, done. So last year we had a Christmas party in Seattle and had like 100 people come. It was this $50 semi-formal party. We had drinks. We had food and drinks, alcohol, all that stuff there. And it was $50. And we had like 100 people come and it was awesome. And that's all the way out in Seattle. We had people fly in and some regional people drive. So we figured, why not make it way, way more than that this year. So we're going to still have a semi-formal winter ball on Sunday night. I'm telling you in reverse how this conference works. But Sunday night, January 28th in Nashville, we're going to have a semi-formal winter ball like last year. And it'll have drinks and food and stuff like that. In addition to that, that whole day, the whole day before, and even a pre-party on Friday night, we're going to have a giant event here. It's Bad Christian Con 2018. So we're going to have speakers, panels, the winter ball, a concert. So I'll just make with the details. Here's what I know so far. Jonathan Merritt is coming and Peter Enns is coming. Peter Enns is probably the featured speaker at the moment, the main one, but I think we're going to lock down another one or two featured speakers still, but I can't announce them yet because still negotiating and trying to figure out travel, stuff like that. So I got several more main speakers and a ton of other fun speakers and people like that. I think Dan Koch and Matt McDonald and tons of other people in the Bad Christian world are going to come. As many people as we can afford to fly and get their accommodations, we're going to do. So more people buy tickets. Great. Here's the crazy thing. There's only 200 tickets available. So I do think it's going to sell out and sell out fast. And maybe I didn't say it's $100. So it costs $50 more than that party. But this is going to be a big deal. We're going to do workshops on podcasting, music business. Reva will be there. I think Bridget will be there. I don't know if she'll get on stage. I'm going to try and get her to participate, but I don't think she will. But you can meet Bridget or who, I don't know. There's going to be plenty of people to meet and hang out with.
You can take pictures with Bridget.
Yeah, that's going to be, we'll have a book. Right. We're going to have some stuff there. We're going to do some stuff with the Women of Mars Hill and get into that. There's tons of topics we're going to do on panels. Also, since we're flying by the seat of our pants, I would love your suggestions on other speakers, panelists, and topic panels that we could do because we get to design it. It's going to be fun. We're going to have alcohol. We got a great venue in Nashville. It's going to be, oh, in fact, on Friday, let me tell you one more thing. It's going to be fun. On Friday night, before the conference starts, as a pre-party, we got a bar in Nashville that does that. Aaron Lunsford's going to host, and Micah Dean, and we're going to do a stand-up comedy show. So probably the three of us will get up and do, improvise a little set, and if somebody else wants to get up there and sign up and do 5 minutes, we can do it. There'll be a few comics in Nashville, and we're going to do that at a bar on Friday night before the conference starts.
That'll be really cool. So even people that want to maybe sign up for 5 minutes can, that are coming to the con, coming to our conference. Right. Wow.
So you know,
I'll do that, man. I'm a great comedian.
Well, you're going to get your chance, my friend. I forgot. If anybody's not on the website, last thing I'll say, and then I'll let y'all talk about it or ask me about it. But Saturday night, everybody at the conference gets to come to what is going to be an unbelievable concert. Now, here's the bill.
Seriously.
King's Kaleidoscope, As Cities Burn, and Emery concert.
Good God. So that's like a once-in-a-lifetime lineup.
It's going to be, I mean, that's
your $100 right there.
Right.
Good God.
I'd pay $100 for that.
So you got the stand, I mean, so those are the three nights. So there's a stand-up comedy. These are just the parties at night. It's the stand-up comedy one, the concert with King's Kaleidoscope, As Cities Burn, and Emery, which those guys are also going to be there for the panels and discussions and stuff during the day, too, so you get to hang out and meet them.
And then even more to be announced.
And then the Winter Ball. And, yeah, we have more musical acts to announce, a couple more, and then definitely more speakers. And we're open to more. I can just make some calls, people. Tell me who to hit up. I'll go get us some more speakers. Anybody you want. And if sell all these tickets, we'll have some more money. And I'm telling you this, we're going to spend all the money that we can get to make this thing go good. That's the whole point of it. If it goes good, we'll do another one. We'll do another one next year. But y'all buy the tickets, and I'll go spend the money on speakers, talents, venue, drinks, cocktails, bands. It's going to be a huge party. You don't want to miss it. There's only 200 tickets, so you got to get them quick.
Yeah, we have an exclusive interview with Matt Lauer, too.
God.
There was the tasteless joke I've been waiting on since the top of the episode.
Yeah.
Hey, I do want people to know this, too, and only for those who are really interested, it'll probably be a maximum of 12 people, but if you pay to come to this, I'm going to be doing like a little workshop that will be with the intention of starting house churches in other parts of the country. So if you're coming and you live in another part of the country and you're thinking, man, that would be cool, we're gonna use this conference also as kind of a launching pad for that. So reach out to me if that's something that's interesting. But
I'm going to be there. I don't know. I might be 12 people too, maybe 15 people, but I'm going to be at the bar drinking. And I want you to stop by the bar, clink my drink, clink the drink with me, and move on. So I think that'd be really good. BadChristianCon.com. Go there. Like Matt said, limited tickets. This is going to be awesome. I could not be more impressed by our lineup, what's to come, what's still TBA. It's going to be unbelievable.
What'd
get
you
your
say,
tickets
Reva?
Now. Get your hotels, whatever. We're trying to book some hotels for us as well, but don't miss this. BadChristianCon.com.
Reva's live. We're live on the internet right now. We haven't even published the episode, and Reva said we're already selling tickets. So
good Lord.
You better get on it fast, people. It may be sold out before the episode's over, so good stuff.
Let's just go ahead and make this a telethon. Reva, tell people we're going to be on the air for 24 hours.
We're staying live from now till the conference. Until every ticket is sold.
Do I have to sing like Frank Sinatra or something? I did it my way. Two more tickets sold. Joey, start going into your comedy. Joey, do your comedy. We got to sell tickets.
Man, the other day my wife comes in. I would have kept going. It would not have been good, but I would have kept going.
I know you. You have no shame.
This is really neat. I do think it's the beginning. It's kind of a new beginning of something special because I do think Bad Christian is supposed to be mobile in some way, shape, or form.
And the Lord told you that.
Yeah, definitely. The Lord has told me a couple of things in my life. One was that the Green Bay Packers was going to win the Super Bowl, and that came true.
Don't ever sit up straight.
Make sure not to sit up straight.
You know how the Lord feels.
And this podcast needs to be mobile. He spoke clearly to me about that, too. So.
When Joey was in his mother's womb, she walked by a man that was lounging at a mall.
That
and
prophesied
Joey kicked
over the womb.
He kicked in the womb.
Okay, looks like we've got our guest here. So let us, Toby, take a second and tell him about movement, and then we'll talk to Jake here.
I sure will. MVMT Watches, which is pronounced movement, was founded on the belief that style shouldn't break the bank. The watchmaker's goal is to change the way consumers think about fashion by offering high-quality, minimalist products at revolutionary prices. With over 1 million watches sold to customers in 160-plus countries around the world, Movement Watches has solidified itself as the world's fastest-growing watch company, and here's why we like it. This company was started by two broke college kids that wanted to wear stylish watches, but couldn't afford them, so they started their own watch company, and that's kind of like us. I really resonate with this company. I really like Movement. I love my Movement watch. Got one for my wife. We all have them. Reva has one. These are great watches, and one of the best things about them is they are affordable. I was really surprised because I was always intimidated to buy a watch because they're really expensive. Was I going to buy one at some store, or I didn't know what to look for or anything. Movement watches are so well made and so good that I'm really excited to wear them. Movement watches start at just $95 at a department store. You're looking at $400 to $500. Movement figured out that by selling online, they were able to cut out the middleman and retail markup, providing the best possible price. At such great prices, Movement watches make wonderful holiday gifts too. That is the best thing, and that's what I think you folks listening right now should do. Get a Movement watch for a Christmas present or for yourself for Christmas. It's so good. Over 1 million watches sold in over 160 countries. So get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to mvmt.com/bcpod. This watch has a really clean design that makes a great fashion statement. Now is the time to step up your watch game. Go to movement.com/bcpod. That's mvmt.com/bcpod.
All right. Jake, can you hear us?
I can.
Very good. And you can see us too. We don't have your video. Do you have can you unmute your video so we can see you?
Oh, yes.
All right.
I have an older computer.
That's
so
okay. Looks great.
Video slows me down.
Well, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having
What's
me
up,
on.
Man?
Hey.
All right. So let me introduce. I'll put it this way. Jake wrote an article that we found that people sent to us, and it was really interesting, right up the alley of stuff we talk about all the time, except for he has a really good name for a phenomenon that we talk a lot about. Jake wrote an article about what he calls zombie pastors. Jake, did you come up with that term, or did you find that somewhere?
No. Well, I can't say if somebody else has used it, but I came up with it.
All right. So what is a zombie pastor?
What I meant by it is just these kind of celebrity pastors who will rise to prominence for one reason or another. And they're really well known. They have lots of books, big media brands, probably have a podcast or something. And then something happens that causes them to have to leave ministry. So the article is mostly about Driscoll, but I also mentioned Tullian Spurgeon in there and Darren Patrick. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that basically being a pastor in that kind of context almost becomes just being a media personality. And if you're a media personality hit by scandal, all you need to do is wait a year or two and you can come back bigger, better than ever, and resume as if nothing happened. Mm-hmm. And so that's mostly what the piece was about, is how do these people keep coming back?
Mm-hmm. And so the thing that's weird about that is it's just this, I've been thinking about this for a while, but we're like at the apex of where Christianity has just become so commercialized and monetized and optimized as a capitalistic business that there's just no difference. I mean, this is just PR at its core. Yep. Where you have an accusation, you hunker down and don't comment on it and hope some other scandal covers yours up and then it goes away. Even that, the kind of stuff that you see for a Kardashian, mm-hmm. may apply here.
Yep.
And the disembodiment of the pastor or the media personality, has just become this disembodied brand or person that's not a real person anymore. Like Andrew Dice Clay is not a real person. He's a character. And so is the big media personality pastor.
Right. No, there was a joke I heard one time about a pastor who was caught in an affair. Turned out he'd had multiple affairs. And the guy, it was just a joke. This is not a real person, although you can imagine it happening. The guy describing it joked that, well, it's worked out all right for him because now he has a new book deal for a book on walking with God through divorce.
Right. Well, no, I mean, that's a joke, but that is, there's real people you can point to that have similar, arcs to that, sure.
Toby's brought up a good point many times on this, and I think something that is concerning for us with this whole phenomenon, which I do think that it is, because it's like, good gosh, I mean, it just bounced right on back, is a lack of realization on the church's part to realize that's the daggum thing that got them in trouble in the first place. Like, being in the spotlight, having that sort of leadership, having that sort of responsibility and people needing you, and that's what caused it in the first place. And us as Christians, we think it's very loving and gracious to say, no, I mean, they're just human beings. That we need to get them back on stage. Are you kidding me? I mean, and that's the thing that makes me feel bad for Perry Noble, because the three of us really like that guy. He's been on this podcast, but it just looks horrible when he hasn't stepped away from the internet. It doesn't seem like a whole month. Like, ever since all this stuff went down, it doesn't seem like he had a leave of absence of any sort.
Right.
Which is just very much so a problem. So what are you, I think I am a little lost as far as what are you trying to just basically shed light on this and educate people? Are you?
Yeah. So the move in the piece I published is kind of a two-step thing. So what will happen a lot of the time, it happened because the impetus for writing the piece was that Pathos Evangelical, popular religion blogging platform, gave Mark Driscoll a blog on their evangelical channel. And so there was this Twitter uproar, as these things happen on Twitter. And one of the lines I saw a lot of people taking was, well, this is just an example of how we need better institutional accountability to keep these things from happening. And if we had more structure and more organization and more supervision, these things wouldn't happen. And what I want to say to that is, that's true to some extent. I grew up in a non-denominational Bible church and saw no lack of horrifying things happen. And the guys doing those things get protected time after time after time because there was no outside accountability. But the thing that's jarring in the case of like Driscoll and Safidjian and Darren Patrick, the three guys I talked about, is that in all three of those cases, the church institutions actually did their job. Now, you can say it took Acts 29 longer than it should have to get rid of Driscoll. It took Morris Hill longer than it should have to get rid of him, but they got rid of him.
That's even a nuanced thing when you say get rid of him. It was, like you said, let me see if I can paint that clearly for people. I find it shocking. I'm not that everybody should know all the details of everything. There's plenty of stories to keep up with. But in this one, people commonly don't understand what happened. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but Toby was at Mars Hill for a long time.
Yeah, I was a worship leader there. Yeah. And Matt went there.
And I was there during the time of that scandal and left amid the scandal. I just couldn't take it anymore. But Toby and I both know Mark a little bit. And, I've talked to Chavijan and Perry Noble's been on the show. Yeah, so,
I actually know Darren Patrick really well, which I think I want to offer a little bit of insight on that. But Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, we'll get back to that. So, with the Mark situation, in case people don't understand it, there's this problem in general where these untethered, non-institutional, no accountability things happen where churches will protect leaders that are in bad stuff because they're worried, their whole thing's wrapped up in it. That's understandable. But in the case of Mars Hill, it wasn't that we just got rid of Mark. It was we or they or collectively the church and the board and the pastors and the people that had been run out and everything were seeking reconciliation with him. Tons and tons of people that I know personally really well, very close to Mark, trying very hard to get in touch with him, to seek reconciliation, to get it figured out, to apologize to him for what they'd done wrong and seek that back and, reconcile and move on and restore him and keep him. That was what Mars Hill was trying to do until at some point Mark was unwilling to repent or recognize or submit to anything at all. It's just not in his character, I don't think. And so then he heard from God that he was released from Mars Hill and left. Once we got to the point of saying, please stay, this is how we want you to stay, this is what we think restoration should look like, that's when he heard from God that he should leave. Although he'd preached for years, he would never leave no matter what. He would die at Mars Hill.
The church I grew up in had to let a pastor go, the senior pastor's son, because he was caught in an affair. And then it was amazing how God provided a great sales job right after that happened.
Mm-hmm. God moved in the storm, right? One of the things you say, Jake, in the article, and it's from mereorthodoxy.com too. Are you a regular contributor there? Is that your
site? I'm editor-in-chief.
Editor-in-chief. So mereorthodoxy.com. But you did say the safety measures, a lot of people think the safety measures failed, but they actually worked just fine. The problem wasn't the safety measures. Those did their job. The problem isn't the lack of structure in evangelicalism. It's the evangelicals themselves. Is it almost like an addiction or something that once you have a pastor and he's up there, the kind of rock star or whatever, that you just can't let him go, that you think, well, we can, you know, it's like having a bad girlfriend or a bad boyfriend. I can fix them. Like, is it like a bad relationship? What makes evangelicals go, let's give this guy a second, third, fourth chance, let's help him out with a job or whatever it might be?
I think evangelicals generally, and I mean, it's hard. It's such a huge and amorphous kind of blob that it's hard to speak in general terms. But I think a lot of evangelicals are deeply pragmatic. And so we, as the last 18 months have shown, are extremely pragmatic about achieving our goals. And we can convince ourselves just to do just about anything, it would seem, if it advances some kind of greater good. I mean, we're now dealing with a majority of Alabama evangelicals who have seemingly convinced themselves that they can justify voting for Roy Moore in order to achieve some kind of legislative agenda.
Yeah, one more anti-abortion vote is worth that. Yeah.
Right. And so I think it's just this really deep-seated pragmatism. I'm reminded, I spent time at Labrie when I was younger. It's a ministry started by a Presbyterian pastor named Francis Schaeffer. And Schaeffer was fond of saying, and I think he took it from Hudson Taylor because his wife was connected to Taylor's ministry, the Lord's work must be done in the Lord's way. And so you can't just talk about the church's objectives like their business goals, where this is our end and the means of getting there is negotiable. Mm-hmm. The work of the Christian life and of the church isn't just in our goals, in the outcomes, it's in the method. And I think that's one of the things that's been lost in a lot of American evangelicalism due to this pragmatic streak that we have.
Yeah. One of the things I always think about too is that, like, it's almost as Christians, as evangelicals, we go, oh man, God raised up this man, and look at all the people coming. Look, I mean, we started in a house, and now we're 20,000. So wait a minute, does that mean God's wrong? Does that mean God's weak? Wait, this guy, no, the enemy was after him because God was using him so much. So we got to cut him some slack, or we got to give him the benefit of the doubt. He's not like those liberals who want to kill babies and stuff. He just, you know, he accidentally had sex with a few women. That was an accident. Like I heard somebody say, that Roy guy from Alabama, man's man. I was like, what in the, how can you like worship Jesus and say stuff like that?
One of the same publications running Interference for More right now, after Hugh Hefner died, eulogized him for upholding gender norms. So it's like,
it's weird. Right. Yeah. We've sacrificed a lot here I think of pragmatic typically as an attribute. I love to think that I'm pragmatic or utilitarian in many ways, but that's an absurd extension of that when you go so far that you, for some stated goal you have, the other stuff doesn't matter. That's a diseased form of pragmatism for sure. And that's what they were saying about the Roy Moore thing. I thought was funny is he launched a thing recently saying it's the gays and lesbians and these immoral people that are making up these accusations. But the 14-year-old women, I saw somebody else say, all this is alleged, I guess, I don't have the details, but his accusers are like white Trump supporting women, I mean,
right?
You know what I mean?
Almost all of them.
Yeah, it's not like it's not some other group involved here. That's just running interference, like you said. So
no, but Matt, the gay people have tons of money and are paying those.
Oh, the gay agenda. Yeah.
<You're right. laughs> The gays are super rich and they're paying for it. Right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It sounds absurd when you say it, right? You can't help but laugh because it's so absurd. Yep. Except for Christians are applauding it.
Yeah.
Saying, yeah, it's you're weird. On our team, buddy. That's just so awful.
Let me ask you something. Pardon the interruption. Sorry about this. But at the end, you're going to say you shouldn't be sorry because I needed to hear that. Let me ask you a question. What do you get when you take a person that works in customer service and, oh yeah, by the way, he loves or she loves her customer service job? You get great service. And that's something that Lyft knows very well. I'm going to tell you about Lyft here in a second. It's a ride-sharing app. And Lyft knows that their drivers are the best when they are happy. And when they're happy, they do a good job. And when they do a good job, that's what keeps Lyft going. And that's what keeps them a flourishing company. So it's a simple formula. Happy drivers mean happy passengers. Maybe that's why 9 out of 10 Lyft rides get a perfect 5-star rating. And if you drive for Lyft, you can earn hundreds of dollars a week plus tips. If you want to earn more, drive more. It's never been easier to give yourself a raise and just work around your own schedule. Lyft was the first rideshare platform with tipping built right into the app, by the way. And getting tips shouldn't depend on your pastor having your passenger having a crumpled bill in their pocket. No way, man. We're in 2017. It's got to be built into the app. Thank you, Lyft, for doing that. You keep 100% of the tips and they add up fast. Drivers have been paid over $200 million since the feature was first introduced. Express Pay lets you get paid almost instantly instead of waiting for weeks. And Lyft has even taken the guesswork out of the pickups. The new AMP device uses color coding to help passengers find their drivers. So join the ride-sharing company that believes in treating its people better. I mean, this is a no-brainer if you need a part-time job and you've got a car. Go to Lyft.com/badchristian today and you can get a $500 new driver bonus. That's Lyft.com/badchristian. Lyft.com/badchristian. Limited time only. Terms apply. There's no defensiveness out of this. In fact, I don't feel inclined to defend any pastor's decision to get someone back in ministry if they do it the right way, the wrong way. I think you could make a strong case for any pastor to say, nope, they don't need to be back. End of story. With that being said, I do want to speak a little bit about Darren Patrick, and we'll actually be able to ask Greg Surratt some questions in a couple of weeks about this. But so Darren Patrick ends up at Seacoast, and Greg Surratt.
Joey is a pastor at Seacoast.
Right. And Greg Surratt is the Greg Surratt's the founding pastor over there. And I know for a fact that Darren Patrick got completely out of the limelight, kept his mouth shut for a very long time, and basically submitted to a very grueling, brutal process under someone else's, basically Greg Surratt, under his supervision. And basically, it was very difficult, a very challenging thing that he went through. Now, he had a pastor who got into similar trouble, which there's many of them, that basically encouraged him not to do that. And so he said, no, I've got to go through this process. So I do put him in somewhat of a different category than, and I'll speak on Perry Noble because he puts all of his stuff out there. Everybody knows about it. I mean, Perry Noble's not doing that. He's not saying, okay, well, I need to follow someone else's lead. I need to take orders from someone else at this point. He's just saying, I'm going to start a new church. I don't need to be gone. I'm just bouncing right back. I mean, do you see some pastors that have to get out and, get away for a while? Do you see any of them doing it the right way? Or would you just say they just need to go away for good?
Yeah. Is it one and done? If you're a failed pastor that has to be removed for...
I think it probably is really difficult to make any kind of unilateral mm-hmm. statement on that, yeah. just because it varies yeah. so much. I do think one of the factors here that needs to be talked about, especially in churches that put more of an emphasis on pastoral training before they hire pastors, is that a lot of pastors, they do their undergrad, and the undergrad might be in some kind of humanities field. And then from their undergrad, they go in straight into seminary and they get their MDiv. And by now they've got 5-figure loan debt. And then 6-8 years into their ministry, they do something and they have to be removed from ministry. Because of the way the economic incentives have worked here, and because of the decisions they've made about job training, it's really hard to find. Now, I mean, in cases like the church I grew up in, it's kind of farcical, and some rich dude in the church just gives the guy a 6-figure sales job. But I know of other pastors who lost their job, and they didn't have a good fallback option. So that complicates all of this, right? Because
is there any way that would be different to think through an analogy, since it's all business, it sounds like? Let's compare that to a doctor, does a shitload of training, spends a ton of money, and has malpractice 6 years.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the difference? Any?
That's a good question. I hadn't thought about that.
I mean, do we want, does that doctor come back? Or I mean, yeah, I get it. Like, you still have medical school debt, but you botched a few plastic surgeries because you were drunk. I don't know what to tell you.
Right. And I'm not saying that to say, therefore, bring the guy who is not repentant and is clearly not qualified, bring him back because you feel bad for him and he needs a job. Like, that's not my point. My point here is just that because of the way job training works for a lot of pastors, it makes this really complicated. I mean, even in, take a different kind of field, if somebody gets fired from a job, they can probably find another similar job unless it's something extremely egregious that's not going to penalize them in this. So it's just a hard thing. Mm-hmm.
Jake, what's interesting about that, though, is let's even keep it in the church. So let's take a maintenance man that basically keeps the church clean, sets up for different events, and let's say he corners a high schooler and takes his pants off and you know, does some sort of a sexual abuse thing. That guy is gone. Like, he is absolutely gone, and there's not good. I mean, now I could see a church being loving and saying, hey, we're here for you. You know, we'll even give you 2 months pay, but they are not going to work that guy back in the maintenance plan. And probably sexual abuse is a bad example because probably
that would be legally actionable.
Yeah. But let's say he cheated with the pastor's wife or cheated with, you know, just a woman at the church.
Yeah,
he's
just
gone.
Infidelity.
That's it. And so what I do think this goes back to is what Toby's been saying all along. Toby, this is like the episode where I just say Toby is just on.
Thank you.
Fire, man. God.
Finally. Praise God.
But this is where it comes to. We pretty much say that guy is needed. The Lord has their hand on him, and so it's our responsibility to figure out how to get them back.
God's not done
with
them yet. That's the big line.
Exactly, and that's just so unhealthy.
It's almost verbatim what one guy was saying about Tullian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say it about a lot of them.
Really?
I mean, that's the idea. But the zombie pastor concept, the more I think about that, I like it because think about it a second. If you're just literally thinking about zombies, they are animated characters of their former selves. They're not even, you know, once you become the platform, I mean, you're not literally dead, but I mean, you're a shell of a person that has all this animated momentum and energy and motivations still. And so you're built to have those motivations, eat brains, you know, preach to people, get in front of people, grow the Twitter, continue the stuff. And it's, you know, that's what it's like. I mean, you rove around and find another congregation to get in front of, to do the thing more. That's really what it feels like. And it's a weird, you know, outcome because they're bigger than the church. I mean, Mark Driscoll's bigger than Mars Hill. He is. He's bigger than that. He is. And it's a weird thing. And it happens in regular culture. And it's not bad. It's just an outcome of where we're at. Or if it is bad, it's, like you said, the evangelicals or the consumer's fault. For instance, and this, nothing bad about these guys, but the band Under Oath, for instance, I was talking to them one time and they were like, yeah, we realized at some point that Spencer and Gillespie's Twitter and Instagram are just bigger and better than Under Oath. How, like, that's just, they're the fame. I mean, they're famous. Like, they can tweet about the concert from their personal Instagram and it's worth more than the band's Facebook page. You know, that's just what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So that's yeah, they are.
Do you think with this sort of thing that we're talking about, Jake, does this stuff make you angry, or do you feel like you need to come to the defense of people that are taken advantage of? Like, what really gets you stirred and motivated with all of this and speaking about it?
That's a good question. That's a hard question.
Because some people could say, oh, just leave these people alone. My gosh, like, what are you doing? You're where the body of Christ was supposed to be an encouragement to each other. And I'm certainly not putting you on the hot seat. I agree with what you're doing. But at the end of the day, you know, if someone said, why are you doing this?
Why are you trying to tear these people down? Yeah.
So, okay, that's helpful. I think part of the thing is, so like thinking about Driscoll, I have no clue how many people are in his church. And I have no clue what kind of money he's being given by his donors to do this church. But I do know that given his history, there's a good chance that there are a lot of people in his church who are going to be hurt by him again. Yeah. I also know that there's no shortage of Christian ministries and churches that could use the funds that are being used to fund this man's quote unquote ministry. I also know, again, this is just drawing on my own experience. So the church I grew up in was one of the largest churches here in Lincoln in the late 70s. It was pushing 2,500, which Lincoln was like 180,000 back then. So it was a big church for the area for that day. And now it's sitting at about 500, and almost everyone I grew up with in youth ministry there has left the church and are statistically speaking more likely to not be Christian at all than to be Christian. And so when I look at this, I'm not just seeing some kind of guy I want to like beat up on the internet. I'm thinking of the people I still get emails from. I've been gone from this church for 12 years. I have an email in my inbox from a guy I knew from when I was there who's still trying to make sense of what he believes coming out of that. And so the wounds that these kind of leaders can inflict on people run very, very deep. Even if it's not like a sexual abuse kind of thing, it's just kind of being a bully and using your power to coerce people. Even that runs pretty deep.
I would suggest that failed churches themselves are just devastating for any reason. And especially the larger they are, because there's this effect, having been at Mars Hill, that I observe, which is regardless of the cause or any of that stuff, that the, if you want to be pragmatic, the outcome of this is Mars Hill siphoned off many, 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 even thousands of people from small community and regional churches, because they had, you know, it seemed like Mars Hill had something better to offer, better music, better preaching, better this, better coffee, better everything. And so there's people that were like a little frustrated with small things at their church. Maybe they, you know, and so like, oh, you know what? I'm ready to go up to the, you know, I'm going to drive to Mars Hill. I'm going to be this. I'm going to the big thing. So they siphon people out of other small communities to this other church that may have had legitimate frustrations with their smaller churches. Think, and this is maybe their last stop. Like, okay, I'm gonna plug in here. This has got to be good enough, you know. And then it collapses. And from my experience, I don't know, man, 30 to 50% of the people I know that came out of smaller churches to Mars Hill, then it collapsed. They're not going back to anywhere. They're just like, they're lost too. Not, you know, they're wanderers now. They just don't, I don't know what to do. And that includes me. That's me, actually. So that I feel the same way.
I'm sorry, were you going to say something, Jake?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Do you guys think that, and I'm not trying to make a point here, like I really am curious what y'all think. Do y'all think that the church can learn anything from NBC, for instance? I don't think Matt Lauer right now is going to be put on this brutal process of getting him better, getting him back on his feet so that he can return to the show. I mean, I don't think that's how they do things, right? He's gone.
Yeah.
He's not going to be on the Today Show anymore. I mean, is that something that the church should pay attention to and at least consider? Or is ministry a different animal?
No, I think it's something to look at for sure. I'm sure there are guys who are who need to be defrocked for being removed from ministry for one reason or another, who might be able to come back long term. Off the top of my head, the people that I have personally known that have needed to be removed from ministry, which is a regrettably high number, I can't think of any that I would say even now. And some of them, it's, again, it's been 10 years. I still would not be comfortable with them coming back into ministry just because of the damage that they can do in that position. I also think, I mean, one of the things that I was thinking about in the aftermath of the Post, it's easy to like go to a Driscoll and talk about how bad this all is. We can also, there's positive examples here we can look at. I've got theological differences with Francis Chan, but I think Chan is a really remarkable figure in all of this. He was pastoring a megachurch in, I think, Northern California, Simi Valley area, or is that LA area?
Yeah, that's Southern California.
I don't know, California. Okay. And it got to where he felt like it was so big, they weren't able to be church to each other anymore. And he was worried about what the effect of that kind of limelight was going to be on his soul, just as an individual Christian. Mm-hmm. And so he stepped away. And I remember at the time, a lot of people thinking it was crazy.
That including Mark Driscoll. There is a video of Driscoll and somebody else and Francis Chan sitting around at a table at a conference. And Francis Chan is crazy. You should look this up because it's exactly what you're talking about. And you'll see Driscoll telling Francis Chan, "You're making a big mistake. I don't agree with you. You're crazy. You're not doing
the
right
thing." Oh, the
white elephant? Yeah, it's called the elephant something or other. That's right.
Elephant room.
And he's just sitting there going, they're keeping it cordial, but you can tell Driscoll's like irritated and thinks he's making a wrong, bad decision. It's like, you know, it's kind of crazy looking back on it now.
Which honestly, I've heard interesting perspectives, and I agree with Jake that I think Francis Chan is remarkable and made the right decision. But I can also understand how some pastors with sincere pastoral hearts are just like, he just left all those people. They're not thinking, oh, he's actually moving away from this big church machine that is, you know, not good with resources or whatever. They're thinking, he left these people, you know? So I get that. I get that. Well, Jake, this has been awesome, man. Where can people go and read this article? Because I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people that want to go that way and read everything. But where can people find you?
So I'm on Twitter. My handle's just Jake_Meador, M-E-A-D-O-R. The original article on zombie pastors is just mereorthodoxy.com/zombie-pastors. Awesome. So.
Well, this is good. This is the kind of stuff that needs to be talked about, man. And it's good that there's voices all over that are paying attention and giving perspective that I think people need to hear. So we appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me on. This was fun.
Yeah, man.
Appreciate it, Jake.
Yeah, no problem. You have a good one.
I have this video. It's long, but I'm going to check it out real quick.
Somebody who
this
doesn't.
Is Chan
everybody
and Driscoll.
Takes you cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. I mean, you got a good church going on, and you hit the eject button, and now you're
this is a good topic,
the international man of Fu Manchu mystery.
Yeah.
And what is going on? What are you thinking? And what's going to happen to your church? And
I think that the church itself in Simi Valley is going to be fine. I mean, these leaders are...
Who's going to preach? Who's going to do...
My executive pastor.
Is it good?
He's good. And we've really tried to focus more on the pastoring for the last couple of years and getting people focused on the pastoral. Right. I mean, but I'm not going to deny there's a sense in which people want to go and hear the guy or, you know, someone they see as very gifted in teaching.
I won't run this whole thing, but if we wanted to put it in, we can, but we can cut this out of the podcast feed. I just want to see what's good here. But it's Driscoll grills him for 15. You can go watch the video, everybody, but it's 15 minutes where Driscoll's getting after him about leaving his church, and then, I don't know, it's crazy.
I can remember, I watched that, I think, sometime around the time I worked at Mars Hill and thinking, man, Driscoll is just funny and cool and awesome. I can remember thinking, like, Francis Chan's quitting. Why is he quitting? Maybe he shouldn't. Like, I mean, like, it just shows you, like, I have changed. Like, now I see it as, now I see it as, wait a minute, maybe Francis Chan was really being thoughtful and careful and trying to honor God. And Driscoll was, now in retrospect, I think he's,
feeling defensive, protecting what he had a little
bit. I saw Francis,
you don't walk away from your church. You built it. It's huge.
I saw Francis Chan as reckless. That's such an interesting point that you made, because I just listened to what Matt played through totally different ears than what when I first saw it. When I first saw it, I was just like you. I was like, you know, Driscoll's doing a good job. He's kind of keeping it light, calling him cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, but he's making a really good point, man. Why would you leave? Right. You know, I'm glad that he's being assertive with Francis Chan, and now I agree. It's crazy.
Well, you know, think's weird about it is that, you know, Driscoll is those things. It is awesome and a good communicator and funny and powerful in that way. It's just, it's a weird thing what you direct it at and what you use it for. And I think people see, it's the same thing, you know, how poor people still like they still want lower taxes on the rich. Like conservatives, they see themselves as, well, one day when I am rich, I don't want the rich people to be taxed. They see the rich people, the Donald Trumps, these other people as heroes. And so even though they're in a low tax bracket, they'll often support not taxing the rich because they see the rich as, I'll be rich. And when it's me, like they you know, you see Mark Driscoll as a Christian as like, I'm trying to talk to people. I'm trying to preach the gospel. I'm trying to reach souls, and he's killing it. Nobody getting his, like, he's the better version of me. Like, you idolize him. That's what it is. And so you don't want him to be taken down because you're following him. He's the better you. Like, one day I'll be in that position. I don't want to be taken down. There's some weird way that people look at it there, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I know there were even some pastors at the time that when Driscoll was trying to make a rebound and rebrand himself and get back into the church world, you know, he was also open to speaking gigs. And I know some pastors that it was tempting to have Driscoll come to their church because it's freaking Mark Driscoll. Like, Mark Driscoll, have him come to the church and it'll be impactful. People will come and all that. But they're just like, no, it's just not the right thing to do. We don't. So there also are pastors that see things similar to how we see them. And you know, so we're not painting the church with one stroke here. But, you know, it's definitely something that's really making me think as far as how different we treat the pastoral role. I mean, it's not good.
For me, I was thinking about the same thing. Like, it is a really good question. Can a pastor come back from this? And you know, we're talking about Darren Patrick. Joey, I know that you know him and are friends with him. And can a pastor come back? My initial response is no. That is my initial response. That is the way I feel now. I might be wrong about that. Maybe there is a real repentance, a real calling, a real renewal of spirit, a real realization that you screwed up and you're back. But one of the points that Jake made that I think is true is there isn't a way out. Like, if we love our pastors, we should expect, one, that they're going to screw up. Two, if this is it, maybe we should have some kind of plan, like an out for pastors. Like, if your pastor screws up, the church will, you know, we'll pay for a college education for 4 years for him to get a new job. Yeah, but he can't preach again.
Well, let's look at the word disqualified. Like, there's a word called disqualified. Now, if the Bible said temporarily disqualified, that'd be different, wouldn't it?
Right.
We're talking about a word, disqualified.
That's true.
What do you requalify?
I mean, if you
undisqualify,
look at
what happens next?
If you look at the qualifications for like a deacon,
right?
For deacons and stuff like that, it doesn't. I mean,
and these pastors preach their whole lives about your reputation is everything. You must guard your reputation. All this stuff.
You're doing a Joey voice.
You have to, like, you know, respect is earned slowly and lost. They preach like that, and then they get disqualified, which is apparently temporary and very, like, what is that? A timeout? I mean, what is it?
I mean, the only thing that's tough here, though, is I feel like this is possibly, because we're all on the same page. What Toby just said about not coming back, Matt nor myself are like, oh, that's crazy. Like, we get that. But I think there's somewhat of a double standard, at least that I have, that bad Christian, we represent ourselves as saying we're no good and nobody is any good. We're all just trying and thank the Lord for a savior. So why would we say, pastors, though, if you do something really bad, you're too messed up to keep being a pastor?
Because the Bible says that. I mean, I'm saying, like, look, I'm not one to be super big on inerrancy, but I'm saying the closer you stick to the Bible, the more you see qualification being a thing and disqualification being a thing biblically.
Sure, sure. A but life you can of be this, disquali-
a man, you know, all, yes. all the qualifications but, there. And
yeah, but an athlete can be ready for two different events in the Olympics, but they can jump in the pool too early for one race and they do it twice. They're disqualified from that. It doesn't mean that they're disqualified as a swimmer.
That's kind of crazy. I mean, like, which analogy fits better, the malpractice doctor or the person who didn't quite make the pole vault?
How about Matt Lauer right now? I mean, there's a chance that he could redeem himself, but is that going to be in 1 year? And what is it like? And his job is about teaching the news.
Yeah, that's clearly not the spirit of the Bible. Is the pole vault?
The Bible is that the actual guy or lady that does the preaching is held to a standard. That's why I mean.
Yeah. Okay. So a sexual standard is what we're saying then, because Peter obviously probably did the worst thing he could possibly do, and he wasn't disqualified. In fact, it seems like the church really needed him to keep going. So are we talking sexual sin disqualifies?
No.
I mean, I obviously think that there is major problems with pastors coming back. I mean, y'all know where I stand with that, but it just seems like, okay, so we have to treat pastors differently. We're saying that pastors are just like everybody else, but then we treat them differently when they mess up really badly. But yeah, I get the point too, that it is partly the nature of their job. So yeah, it's a tricky one. It's definitely tricky.
Yeah. I mean, in the Bible, I think the big one is the sexual sin, though, right? That's the one that gets everybody, or that's the one that really disqualifies you. Be married to one wife, or be faithful to one wife, be sober, several different things. But that is one of the criteria. So what if we just started there? If you do sexual sin, you don't get to preach anymore. Why would that be so crazy? Like, let's just start with that one. Like, if it's something else, okay, we'll talk about that down the road. Let's just start with one. If you do some sexual sin stuff,
like masturbate to porn.
Well, yeah, but that gets gray because everybody's a lustian,
right.
And you know that falls apart, and you know,
or not. I mean, maybe so. I mean, maybe Joey should be disqualified. Maybe you should be disqualified. I mean, like,
maybe so.
I'm being really serious. Like, not right. Joe. I guess I don't feel like you should, because I think you're a great guy and you try and you're doing stuff. But maybe it's such a high standard that we have lowered our standards too much.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. How many churches are there? Like,
I mean, what if you did look at porn and masturbated? You don't preach.
Like, but then you're doing this, the very thing that we don't like, and that's setting pastors on like this platform that's better than everybody else. Well, you just did that again then by saying if a pastor messes up and masturbates to porn, he can't pastor again, but everybody else, that doesn't apply to you. So
it's so hard in 2017 to talk about the Bible. It's almost too hard, but it says, if you want to try to follow it, it says above reproach in 1 Timothy. It says respectable, and it says well thought of by outsiders or qualifications. So now, if you want the more biblical inerrant you are, you say well thought of by outsiders. Now, how are you going to interpret that shit? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, and why would you be so hard on, gay is wrong, and if somebody says, well, what if it's monogamous? The Bible isn't clear on that, and they go, nope, gay is wrong.
Right. I mean,
why would you be so hard on the certain things, but not this one, is all I'm saying. I'm in agreement with you. I don't think you should step down. I think you're very open and honest about your life.
Joey
and your struggle.
Stepping down by the end of the episode. Yeah.
Shit, man. Okay, I'm done. God, now I don't know what I'm going to do. I can't be a school teacher again.
All right, let's talk about the conference some more before we get out of here. Do y'all have any other questions about it? Anything else to talk about it? Do we figure out where people will stay? We're going to do Airbnbs. What else are we going to do?
People can find their own accommodations too, but I'm working right now to try and talk to a few hotels to see if we can reserve some floors or a room or two or whatever we can do. So there'll be some TBA about that as well. But yeah, if you're coming, I would highly recommend you go ahead and book a hotel as well, because I don't know what's going on that weekend. You know, what if the Titans are headed towards the Super Bowl or something? I don't know. Did you say the date yet?
Yes, January 27th and 28th, which is the week before Super Bowl Sunday, which means it won't be a football game. We know that. Not only a Titans game, there'll be no football on that Sunday. So, and we will be downtown, right by, really close to Titans Stadium, but it is downtown Nashville. So if you're looking for accommodations this early, Well, it's at the Anchor Church. That's the venue. We've got that. I confirmed that yesterday. So if you look up the Anchor Church's address, it's right there, kind of downtown.
I guess,
you know, find your Airbnbs, the hotels close by. Maybe we'll get a discount on a hotel soon.
I guess the only thing that I would want to point out, and hopefully you can discern this on your own by just hearing how Matt described it and reading the stuff that's going on. I mean, when you think conference, don't think what you are normally accustomed to, because maybe you'd be disappointed. This is going to be a lot different from
what would they expect that they'd be disappointed not to get in your experience with dumb conferences?
Just basically the... No, I think you just made a good point. They're going to be pleasantly surprised.
I almost don't even want to use the word conference because those things are so stiff. But this will not be stiff. It's going to be only 200 spots, so I mean it's going to be hard to keep that from being literally just people in the BC club that have already bought tickets since we've started this episode. Yeah. So it's going to be rowdy. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in the BC club that are purchasing right now because I posted it on BC club. So if you're listening to this and you're interested, you need to just go to the website now, honestly, because very well may not be any tickets left by that time.
Is there a
danger that like it'll be reported like the day after Bad Christian Con, it'll be all over the news, like just a gang of these liberal Christians started fighting and killing people in downtown? Like, are we going to get so wild and crazy that it's going to be like that? Like, we'll go...
A pack of roving...
All the people visiting the Bad Christian Con will go to a church and just fight people.
Get drunk and just stumble out of the conference and go pick on people.
Head towards a Baptist church.
Right.
BadChristianCon.com.
Oh, I did forget. I didn't say yet the theme of the conference, which is basically, I don't know what to put in the website. I don't have the perfect language for it yet. But I said something about the theme of it is going to be that we're moving into... At this point, we've uncoupled the Christianity from politics and moral superiority. These things are all a mess now. You know, the Christian dynamic is not the lead thing in the country anymore. And so that's a post-Christian future we're moving into. And we're kind of excited about it because it means we get to design the future we want. And I think that starts right with Bad Christian and like-minded people like us that are out there doing stuff. It's kind of an exciting time. I know some things have been destroyed that we have all participated in and cared about, but, you know, 2016-17 is kind of a hinge point of history and church history, I believe. So it's kind of exciting to look to the future and say, in regards to faith and Jesus Christ, what is the future? Well, I don't know. Let's talk about it. Let's start it. Let's figure it out. What does decentralized, less institutional power mean for the Christian church? Let's talk. Here we go. What are we thinking? What do we get to design? We have more freedom now than we did before. It's going to be fun.
Yep. Hey, well, real quick, let me highlight some names of people that helped make this happen. And I want to say I will figure it's not going to be anything off the charts or anything, but I'm going to figure out something special to do for the BC Clubbers that show up in Nashville on January. But these people have just recently joined. That's Bruce F. Pagano II, Will Russell, Susanna Dowd, Matthew Moe. I think that's Moe, M-E-A-U-X, Nicholas Ventura, Matthew Tyre, T-Y-R-E, Kate A. Jacquez or Jakes, Derek Gridley, Matt Meltzler, and Alex Esposito. Thank y'all for joining the BC Club. You can go to thebcclub.com and check out what BC Club is all about. These are the folks that help keep us going. So
I'll give you an example of what the BC Club's contributions and money goes to. It goes to organizing, paying the design, paying for this website. We've already booked a bunch of people's travel. You know, we hadn't earned a dime. Well, I guess we've sold some tickets now, so we're going to start recouping some money. But we already went out and spent many thousands of dollars to make this conference happen before ticket one.
Actually, millions of dollars.
Millions of dollars, because we could just decide we're going to do a conference, take the support of the BC Club, and then go make it happen. Start spending the money immediately, and it's great. It's working. Everybody I've talked to is like, dude, I totally want to come. Booking Pete Inns, no problem. You know, it's amazing. So thank you guys for giving us a voice and making this be a community, because we just tell people that are very cool that we want to hear from, and everybody's like, yes, I want to come. I'd like to participate. It's very, very easy. I can't imagine what it would take to start a Christian conference or any conference from scratch, you know. But we've got a community already, so it's just a matter of why wouldn't we put everybody together? And thank you guys for supporting us with the club and you know, just being a listener, everybody. It's going
to
be fun.
Hey, I'm going to go ahead. Matt, I'm going to go ahead. Toby, you too. I'm talking to you. I'm going to go ahead and declare BC as a Christian denomination. Like, I'm just going to go ahead and declare
official
that.
Official denomination?
Because, yeah, it's an official it's a denomination. We're not non-denominational. We are BC. You know, you've got PC, I think, like ECPC or something like that. And they're like a
bastard. ECPC, lemon squeezy? Denomination?
But yeah, BC, we're a denomination. And it really PCP. Is cool. Matt said that we
Bad
are
Christian
a big community. Matt
hey,
said
Joey,
we're
I was
community.
Thinking what you could do that would be special for the people is you could have an adult size booth.
Yeah.
Where people come in.
Penis viewing booth.
But I did want to say
penis evaluation booth.
You get, I mean,
Spencer.
So nobody, no, there's no harassment there. You know what you're getting into when you walk in. Yeah, it's consistent. If you walk in that booth, you know what to expect, but Pastor Joey will be there. It's an adult-sized booth. Now, the bad thing is, Joey, I don't know if Joey actually is going to be able to be at the conference. Virgil Svensson is pressing charges of sexual harassment against Joey for showing up. Pastor in Charleston, South Carolina's own father. I was sitting in my living room and my son.
You're right.
My God. Oh,
you're right. It fits the profile.
I flashed
my
dad.
It didn't sound like something we knew was a problem at the time, but it fits the profile.
Joey seemed like such a good guy. Now his own father he abused.
I didn't know that was a thing, but that's freaky. Like now that's all of that's coming out, that's just the move. Like you just have somebody come in your office and you just pull your pants down. Like, that's crazy. Yeah. Like it really is just horrific.
I would be so, I don't understand how you get to that point. I really don't. We got to end this podcast. But I mean, how do you, like, I'd feel so nervous and terrible.
I was desperate.
But that's what power does.
No, I'm talking, Joey, we're not talking about you. We're talking about these people. But I'm just saying.
But that's the move.
I understand, yeah.
But you know what's horrifying about that? Because it is horrifying. It's so bad that they did that. And here's just what's awful about it. People don't understand it, but it obviously some other percentage of the time, over 50%, it just worked.
Gosh.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like that's the dark side of that is sometimes it didn't work, but that's the move that these people will do when they have enough power and confidence because it must work. Like it's not
there's
like
a percentage.
It's not 99 out of 100 people ran out of the room with allegations. Something other than that happened most of the time. That's horrible, but it's true.
Yeah, and those dudes, there was no accountability, or nobody believed them, or people shut down the lady. So they would try it and go, well, that one didn't work out. Moving on.
Right. It's struck just a numbers there. Game. I tried it 100 times. Yeah. It worked 60.
Yeah.
I mean,
no, that intern's a jerk. I'm firing her.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how the power moves. But I cannot. It is just so crazy. I have really been the whole idea. I mean, we could talk about this forever. Maybe we should talk about this in the future too. But I keep seeing the word predator, like sexual predators and stuff like that. And that plays into that women are prey, and that whole idea of women being prey and how did we get there and why? What is that psychology and thought process and power there that women are prey? Because I guess you could say that for anybody with less power to a more powerful person, but power corrupts, man. It just does. When you have some power, it obviously corrupts you. And that's just like today's, when a pastor gets some power, they're easily able to be corrupted. It just is.
And you see that with the people that know the least about the situation almost only defend the powerful person. That's what the only thing I ever hear about the pastors. I say, well, it's actually, this is a problem, this problem. Well, how do you, somebody that has no grip on the situation will usually come to the defense of the powerful person. This is a lot of problems there, but
that's what I'm saying. What was Virgil Svensson supposed to do? His son's a big wig at Seacoast Megachurch. But Virgil Svensson, who can he tell? And Barbara just stood by while it all happened. Barbara's the real sick person here.
Hey, I never told y'all like the complete end of that story, did I?
I don't know. Please do.
So my dad.
So I'm pulling my pants back up.
Can I give? I'll give, look, everybody hadn't been here since episode 92
That's
or
right.
whatever that would be. So I'll say in one sentence, Joey was worried that his penis was the size of a child's. So he showed it to his, pulled his pants down and showed it to his father before his wedding night to make sure he was adult size. And his father confirmed that he, in fact, did have an adult size wiener.
Yeah,
now tell me
if
the
you
end of the
know,
story, please.
And if you want to know why I thought I had a tiny penis, you have to buy my book, okay?
Yeah.
So,
it's titled Why I Thought I Had a Tiny Penis by Joey Svensson.
No, fundamentalist. So, listen, I basically, my dad, there's a point where he doesn't understand why I did that. Like, even
yeah,
though I said...
What? How could he not?
Listen to what he guesses. He says, Joey... He said, are you scared about your honeymoon night? And he says, because, you know, when me and your mom, you know, basically what I did, I was like, no, Dad, no, that's not the problem. He was about to tell me how he handled his honeymoon night.
Oh, my.
Like,
Lord.
What to do? Like, he was about to tell you, describe what he did to your mom on this honeymoon night?
Yes.
And you stopped him? What kind of maniac?
I don't want to hear that.
It would have been worth it so you could tell it to me later, though. You should have taken one for the team there. You should have let him tell you so you could have told me and Toby later.
Or everybody that listens to the podcast.
I know.
Don't everybody that listens to the podcast would love to know how your mom and dad had sex. What Virgil Svensson's moves were on the honeymoon.
Just the details. I mean, so...
Hey, I have always wondered, was it completely silent in the room? Like, you heard the zipper come down, the belt unbuckle, the pants go, like, was it almost slow motion for you? And you saw your dad's eyes slowly go down.
And then he took, what did he take? Two super long, deep breaths before he spoke? I mean, how long was the pause once your pants were down?
I do remember that he was definitely lounging. I remember he was chill, boy. He was, like, leaning back on the couch. And then when I showed him, he was just so surprised.
He was erect.
But then he kind of had a smile on his face, and he just kind of, like, patted me on the knee, and he was just like, yeah, you're fine. You're fine.
How sweet that wow. is. I really think that's amazing.
Yeah. My dad would have shot me. No, not joking. He would have pulled out a gun and shot me. Not joking, 100%.
I cannot.
He would have
imagine.
Thought you were a liberal. He would have been like, what yeah. are you, a liberal?
Get that liberal wiener out of here. My God, get that liberal thing out of here. All right, we're out.
You've been listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, jabberjawmedia.com.